Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance. This is your host, Alan Lee, and welcome to episode 26 of The Vampire Squid. This has definitely been one of the more interesting weeks with the elections. I won't comment on it too much, but just wanted to say that despite your political affiliation, I think that we should all feel very lucky that we are able to vote for our president. And I know that's a luxury that is not afforded to many countries out there. So enough with the elections. Today's episode, we are going to be talking about Shark Tank. And Shark Tank is, for those of you that don't know, a very popular TV show on, I believe it's ABC or NBC, I can't remember. But it's a very popular TV show where entrepreneurs pitch the sharks. And the sharks are basically investors that listen to the pitches and decide if they want to contribute and invest into these companies. Now, this is probably one of my favorite television shows, you know, right there with Narcos and Game of Thrones. But I think it's important to do this episode because I think that many of you probably watch Shark Tank out there. And if you guys don't, you should definitely give it a check out. But Shark Tank probably is the closest that everyday people will get to see to how venture capital pitches work and how entrepreneurs pitch their companies. And I think it's a really great show because it's basically providing transparency in finance, specifically in venture capital. And that is the main goal of this podcast as well. So the way I want to do the episode today is to first give a quick background on the TV show. Then I want to talk about some of the deal structures in Shark Tank. Then I'll go into some of the differences and similarities between Shark Tank and actual venture capital pitching. And then we'll close off with one of my favorite Shark Tank pitches. So a quick background on Shark Tank. As I mentioned before, entrepreneurs get to pitch investors. And the show lasts only between 10 to 20 minutes per pitch. But the actual recording of the pitch lasts anywhere between 30 minutes to 2.5 hours. Some of the main industries that Shark Tank focuses on, or the entrepreneurs focus on, are food and beverage, household items, sports, and clothes. So not the traditional technology investing that you usually see in venture capital, but more of the consumer products good side. And the interesting part is definitely who the sharks are. And the sharks are a medley of successful entrepreneurs themselves, business people, which include Mark Cuban, who I think most of you guys know, the Dallas Mavericks owner, founded Broadcast.com, which sold to Yahoo. You guys have Kevin O'Leary, who's also known as Mr. Wonderful because he is just so excited to be there all the time and so nice. Obviously, I'm saying that with a bit of sarcasm. You have Damon John, who created FUBU. And FUBU is the clothing brand For Us By Us. If you guys aren't familiar with it, it's a very popular clothing line. You have Barbara Corcoran, who founded the Corcoran Group. You have Robert Herjavec, who founded the Herjavec Group. And you have Lori Greiner, who founded QVC. And QVC is obviously the television show where they sell products. And I think all those companies have done fairly well. And then you have some guest episodes with guest sharks like Ashton Kutcher, who everybody knows. And you have Chris Sacca, who's one of the most successful venture capitalists out there. So that is the basic structure of what Shark Tank is. And it's fairly entertaining to hear these pitches and hear the kind of questions that the sharks ask them and, you know, how the entrepreneurs pitch their companies. And some of them are really good and some of them are, you know, a little bit embarrassing or a little bit funny. But in terms of the deal structure of how the deals usually work on Shark Tank, most of the deals work in the form of cash for equity. And that is taking maybe, say, I'll invest $50,000 for 10% of your company. And that's obviously potentially valuing the company at $500,000 or $500,000. So some of the pros of this type of investment is that if the pie grows bigger, while your share percentage may stay the same, you get a share of a bigger pie. So say that $500,000 company grows to $1 million and say they didn't raise any more equity afterwards, you still keep 10%. So your $50,000 investment goes to $100,000. And also, if you invest into the company and you invest and get over 50%, you obviously maintain control of the company and you get a say in the decision, or you get to make the decision about how the company is run. So this is a big debate amongst the sharks and the entrepreneurs. Who gets what percentage? Do they get control, or does the entrepreneur get control? And this is a big part of what they debate upon or argue about on the show. And sharks obviously want more equity, and entrepreneurs obviously want to give a little bit less equity because they want to retain the shares and the profits of the company, or more of the shares and profits of the company. I would say some of the cons of this type of investment for cash for equity is, obviously, if the company is not generating cash, then you're not entitled to any earnings. And if obviously the company doesn't grow, then your share of the pie is the same size. So you don't really generate a return if the company gets liquidated. Equity is also paid after debt in terms of the capital structure. So debt always comes before equity. So say the value of the business becomes lower than the amount of debt that the business has, then the equity shareholders get nothing because you have to pay off the debt holders before you pay the equity holders. So in terms of another type of deal structure that happens on Shark Tank, you have debt or loans. So this is your typical debt and loan where you offer a certain amount of cash and the investor has to pay back that entire principal or the full amount of that cash, plus a certain interest percent that you decide upfront before they pay you the principal. And the pros for this type of investment from the investor's point of view is, obviously, this is a little bit less risky investment because debt is paid before equity, so you get paid before the equity holders do. And you can see this based on the P&L, because you have to take out interest before you get to net income. And net income is obviously what you can distribute to the shareholders. And the pros are also, if this company is a high cash generating company, then you're fairly certain that you're going to get paid for your debt. But if the company isn't growing much, it doesn't really matter, because as long as the company keeps generating cash, then you keep getting paid. And for equity holders, you want the company to really grow. But for debt holders, you don't necessarily care too much if the company grows, but you care more if it can generate cash so that you can at least get your interest and your principal back. And also, another pro is that depending on the covenant, if they're not able to make the interest payments, you could potentially get a percentage of the company or take over the company if the company goes into default or if they get bankrupt. So this is not necessarily a really big pro, because you don't necessarily want control of a company that is going bankrupt or can't pay its interest. But sometimes they work that into the terms of the deal for the debt, that if they can't make the interest payments, that they get to control the company. And as I mentioned before, it's obviously paid before equity, so you're higher up on the capital structure. Obviously, some of the cons of the debt structure is that you have limited returns. So say that company that was $500,000 grows to $50 billion, which happens a lot of time in tech, you're still just entitled to the interest payments and the principal that you gave, and you don't get to grow with the company. Obviously, the trade-off between that is that you're higher on the capital structure. And also, you have no influence on the decision-making because you don't own a percentage of the equity. You're only just a debt holder, and you don't get voting rights as just a debt holder. And then finally, one of the deal structures are royalties. And royalties are usually done by Mr. Wonderful, because how a royalty works is that it's treated almost like a cost of goods sold, and you're paid before both the debt and the equity holders. So if you have a 1% royalty on the revenue of X product and the company generates $100, you get $1 of every $100 that that company generates off the top. This is paid before debt holders and equity holders. This is obviously the pro is that you're the highest on the capital structure, and there's basically no risk as long as the company can generate revenue. Obviously, the cons are that you have limited returns, and usually slapping on a royalty can hinder the company from growing. since you're invested just in the royalty, you don't necessarily care that much, but a lot of times they have combinations of these structures. So they have maybe 5% equity, and they also want to have a 1% royalty on the revenues. So you don't want to hinder the growth of the company, especially if you own some of the equity, because you want that to be able to grow. So those are the most common deal structures, equity, debt, and the royalties. And what a lot of the sharks do is that they usually combine a certain combination of debt or equity and a royalty. And Mr. Wonderful obviously likes the royalty a bit more than all the other sharks. Now, so moving on to what are some of the differences and similarities between the Shark Tank and actual venture capital pitching. So, you know, I think that some of the similarities are the sharks ask very similar questions. They ask about the market potential of the product. They ask about the financial statements, how much the company has grown, how much revenue it's generating, how much are you paying for your product, how much are you paying for your salaries. They also ask things like, what's your vision for the company? What do you see this company doing 5 or 10 years down the line? You know, they also ask about the background of the CEO, which is very important. They want to know that you're motivated, that you're driven, that you necessarily have had past successes, or you have examples of hard work, or you have a very interesting story of why you came up with this company. And usually you find that the more impassioned that you are about a certain product or a certain service, you're more likely to work harder, and you're more likely to succeed, obviously, if you're more enveloped in the product or service and the company. Another similarity is that a lot of times they invest cash for equity, which is one of the deal structures, and that's usually where the similarities stop. So then the differences are Shark Tank tends to be a lot less tech focused, and as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, it is a lot more food and beverage, home and kitchen, sports, clothing, so a lot more consumer product focused. In venture capital, you have more technology nowadays, especially with applications. You have internet companies, you have software companies, and I mean, nowadays you have artificial intelligence, you have Bitcoin companies, and you know, all the gamut of the new and developed technologies out there. I would also say that venture capital deals are usually bigger than the Shark Tank episodes, obviously depending on what stage you're investing in, but not including seed funding, venture capital is usually between hundreds of thousands to millions to billions. And Shark Tank, I usually see tens of thousands, and the upper echelon is hundreds of thousands, which is, I think, fairly rare from the episodes that I've seen so far. Also, venture capital is a little bit different in that venture capital firms have LP money, and LP is an acronym for limited partners. Limited partners are these institutional funds that invest their money into the venture capital fund, and then the venture capital funds invest the LP money into these startups. So Shark Tank is more of angel investing, so just individual investors. So you are using your own money and investing it into startups that you think would be successful. And also, VCs rarely, if ever, do a straight debt or a royalty type of deal structure, because if you keep in mind that venture capital firms are usually investing in companies that have high growth, if you hit it with debt or with that royalty, then you really hinder the growth, because the company will have to focus on generating cash and paying back that interest or paying that royalty, where in the early stages of a company, they usually focus on growth. So instead of using that cash to pay down interest or to pay down the royalty, you want the cash to be used for expanding your sales team, expanding your marketing team, you know, focusing on the product, making sure that you grow to an expansive size before you start monetizing your companies. Most of these tech companies are reinvesting all their cash into the marketing spend, into the sales spend, into the R&D. So they're many times generating negative profit because they are focused on growth. And once they believe that they hit a certain customer base or consumer size, then they can start focusing on monetizing all those users. But in the early stages, you want to focus on more of the growth aspects, which is sales and marketing and the research and development. So now on to one of my favorite episodes of Shark Tank. This episode was on, the product was coffee meets bagel. And I thought this was a very interesting episode for a few reasons. You know, first of all, it was a great pitch. It was done by three sisters who had all had really incredible backgrounds and worked in great places, but they decided to band together and create the startup and leave their nice cushy jobs. So I admired the entrepreneurial spirit. The company was doing very well. It was growing double digits in terms of their customer size. So, what Coffee Meets Bagel is, if you guys don't know what it is, it's a dating site. And the way it's different from other dating sites like Tinder, Hinge, Thrinder, all these other dating sites is Coffee Meets Bagel only provides one match a day, I think at noon. And the match is curated using their machine learning algorithm. So based on the number of mutual friends that you guys have, your interests, etc., and you are given a match together instead of a lot of the other apps out there where you just swipe right hundreds of people and hopefully someone on the other side will give you a match. And if both of the people agree to connect, then can you start messaging? So it was really interesting to see the episode because during their pitch, they noted that the key to successful dating apps is to make sure that the women are happy. And that's obviously makes a lot of sense because the ratio is probably a little bit higher for guys to girls. So if you're able to attract a lot of girls to the apps, then you're able to obviously attract a lot of guys and not necessarily the other way around. It was great that the app was focused on making, one curated match a day. It was nice that the girl would have to accept the match that was given to them. So it was very female friendly. It wasn't a bombardment of random people that you don't know or the ability to swipe right, hundreds of times. It felt more natural. And the name of the company is also very interesting because it doesn't sound like a dating app. Coffee Meets Bagel sounds a little bit more casual. And the way that people talk about it becomes more casual too. So one person could say, oh, I had a bad bagel today, or I had a super yummy bagel today, and say that to friends. And then other people wouldn't notice that, oh, these guys are using dating apps. So a lot of my friends have actually used these apps and started dating. So this app is has been quite successful, especially among people in San Francisco and New York and LA, I believe. And a lot of my friends have even successfully used the app. So what I really thought was really impressive about this episode, besides the product, was how committed the founders were to the success of the product. And you can find this out because Mark Cuban ended up offering them $30 million he said, what would you guys do if I offered you $30 million for the product? And then without hesitation, they said no. So, I'm a big fan of people that have a strong commitment to their vision, who believe in themselves enough to turn down, great sums of money because they think that only under their leadership, they can take this company a lot bigger and generate a lot more value for customers. So that is one of my favorite episodes, and I'll provide you guys a link to the episode in the show notes. And, just in closing, I thought doing this episode was important because, hopefully a lot of you guys out there are hopeful entrepreneurs or you're currently in finance and potentially thinking about an idea. So first of all, if you guys aren't watching Shark Tank, you should definitely watch Shark Tank. And second, if you guys are watching Shark Tank, hopefully this episode clarifies a little bit about how the sharks think about making these types of investments and the tools that they have in terms of using their equity, using debt, using royalties, and what are some of the pros and cons of using each type of structure for both the investor and for the entrepreneur. So until next time, thank you guys so much for listening and talk to you soon. Ciao.